Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, welcome back. Now, over the weekend, I received an email from Kill residents regarding a meeting that they had with Minister Roderick O'Gorman last Thursday evening, where they explained that they wanted the use of the equestrian centre to house displaced people from Ukraine to be stopped, as they said it's inhumane and will put further strain on the village. They say that when they met with Roderick O'Gorman, they asked for a cap on numbers. The department response was that they could not guarantee that the number will remain at 340, but that it is their intention to only put 340 people in the equestrian centre. Once the displaced people have moved into phase one, the construction on pods will continue for phase two and phase three. The residents say that the minister confirmed the numbers would actually be 340 people, and a contract was signed in February, and they also say that Minister O'Gorman apologised for incorrectly informing residents at their meeting in November last year that there will be 165 people. In fact, apparently it's the number of pods will be 165, but intended to house 340 people. Fine Gael councillor on the Naas Municipal District and Mayor of Kildare, Fintan Brett, is with us. Good morning to you, Fintan.
Good morning, Owen. Good morning, listeners.
What's your reaction to this meeting, Fintan? I know you've been speaking to some of the residents, but this seems to be a little bit of a mess, really, from the start. There's misinformation circulating, there's false information circulating. Nobody can really get a handle on what is actually happening out at the equestrian centre, but this meeting last Thursday would hope to clarify that.
Well, I suppose, Owen, the first thing I'd say is that it's very sad and I think a very sad day for the village of Kill to see the Kill Resident Action Group, the posts and the far right propaganda and misinformation being posted on what was supposed to be a group's information for the people around it. It's embarrassing and shameful, and I'd have to say that straight out, because the fact of the matter is this, Owen, and I've been on here a few times explaining that the exact details that I have given you over 3 or 4 months is exactly what the minister, apart from the fact that I had said to the people that I had thought the 340 was the total because the fire search was 340, but you just explained there that he said 165, but he mixed it up with the pods. So that is what it is at the moment. Still is.
Right.
It has never changed that it is Ukrainians, yet we're seeing these films from wherever they're from, all about migrants and 1,800 men destroying the village. Like, where is this coming from? It has to be somebody or some people have obviously infiltrated this organisation and starting putting this up, because it is not correct. And the last thing on this phase of it I'll say to you is that I have spoken to my fellow councillors in the Naas MD and other councillors around the county, to the TDs in the area, to the senator in the area, and every one of us are absolutely agreed that 345 is the total number that should be in this centre. And we will not, as far as anything I can do, and will not allow that to be exceeded, because it's not what's there, to be fair. And I was in on Thursday on a visit. While it's not perfect, it will be clean, it will be warm, there'll be food, there'll be showers, there'll be toilets with underground heating on it, food, hot food brought in, there's coffee docks for people and that. Last Thursday, we were hoping to have a meeting with the minister, but he couldn't facilitate us, so we're having that this week. But the councillors from the Naas MD and the director of planning, Owen Ryan, we visited that place last Thursday, and we made out a list of items we thought needed attention on that, and we have forwarded that to the minister's office. And to be fair, Owen Wilson, his advisor, has come back and say they're aware of certain amounts of them and that, and a couple of ideas we had put in, he said, are good, and that he will be speaking to the developer on them.
Okay, just to clarify as well, we did ask some of the residents from Kill and the Kill Residents Action Group to join us on the show this morning to go through what was discussed at that meeting, but nobody was available to join us for an interview this morning, so they sent through an email to us with some of the information. And I've seen some of those posts, Fintan, that you're referencing there, and I think what's hard really is that there are a number of residents in Kill who have genuine concerns in terms of the infrastructure in the village, that schools are overrun, doctors' facilities are overrun, etc., etc., that the sewage system and all that won't be up to standard. But there are people maybe who are putting messages up on that saying that these are all going to come from different countries, that it's just going to be single males going into the equestrian centre, etc. But the official correspondence, which is what we have to go off, the official correspondence that we received from the department and from Minister Roderick O'Gorman is that this is solely Ukrainian families going into the equestrian centre. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct, Owen. And I will also point out, you know, what really, what's coming there is mostly women and children. These are people who have lost loved ones already in this war, who has brothers, fathers, husbands, and they're coming here for refuge. And up outside, blocking this place, are women with children of the same age and that. I fail to comprehend how they would not have the humanity to understand what's coming there. And that this propaganda about hundreds of males coming, IPs coming in, is just untrue. The place is not suitable. The minister has said this loads of times, that centre is not, it's too far away from the village, it's not on bus routes and that as such, and it's not suitable. As regards, if the school is full, the school is full. We know that the medical is centre is full also. By and large, if there's a medical or there'll be medical facilities there, and the same if the Department of Children have made arrangements in other places for children to attend school, bust them out of there on it, and that's the way this will be. It will not as such impact on the village. In fact, the only way it might impact on the village is the fact that it may create some jobs for people in the centre and that.
Right.
But as I say, it's women and children, and I cannot emphasise that enough to the people of Kale and surrounds. This is women and children fleeing war who are here, not by their choice.
Right. Do we have now, Fintan, do you feel actual solid information that the residents in Kill can work off? Because, again, these numbers that are being thrown around are frustrating from the point of view that they're not getting solid information. And it's not really acceptable to just say, oh, that was a mistake. Oh, I meant 165 pods. I didn't mean 165 people, etc., etc. 340 now is what's been said is the maximum. That's the capacity at the equestrian centre in Kill. Is that absolutely rock solid?
That is absolutely. And on the Kill Resident Action Group, it's there. If they go back and look at their email, that is the exact information I gave them 2 or 3 months ago. Because the minute I found that the fire cert was issued, it was quite obvious. That was for 340 people. So the capacity, the maximum is 340, and I will also say that Owen Wilson, he's the advisor to the minister, has on a couple of occasions said that the people are coming in a couple of phases, and that he thought that there'd be 220-230. He wasn't quite sure whether it would reach the 340. It all depends on what pans out in the war in the Ukraine.
Okay, do we have a timeline for when people will start moving into the refugee centre?
Yeah, well, following our, we were told probably around the 4th of April, but as I said earlier, we had a site visit there last Thursday, and certainly it will not be ready by that. And from speaking to the foreman, we're talking maybe the end of April commencing, and if that's for the first phase of about 114. Then about, I'd say, maybe mid to late May, the second group. And the final group, if they do come, will probably be early June or thereabouts on that. And that allows the site to be developed and a play area outside. And As I said, we have forwarded details to the Minister of stuff we'd like to see done there in addition. But I have to point out to everybody that people saying this is inhumane, it is intermittent more times suitable than tents out in the open, which is the alternative, unfortunately, at this stage for some of these people. So this kill equestrine with the pods and the way it's put together, not ideal in that, but it'll be warm, it'll be clean, and there'll be warm food provided. And I think in the circumstances, we should support these women and children coming here to kill.
All right, that's Fine Gael councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Mayor of Kildare, Fintan Brett, joining us there on the show this morning. Thanks indeed for your time, Fintan, and good morning. It's just about getting actual factual information out there after that meeting on Thursday evening. So what we have now is Minister Roderick O'Gorman confirming that the numbers will be 340 people at the equestrian centre in Kill. Residents in Kill still feel as though the site is unsuitable for housing people fleeing war. They feel as though it's too many people, 340 coming in, and they also feel as though the infrastructure is not in the village, you know, with schools, doctors' facilities, etc., to take these people in. Again, we invited residents from Kill to come on air with us, but there was nobody available to take our call. Now, some of the messages that have come in to us, will you tell the group in Kill that it's time to get over themselves and to cop on? They're being inhumane, that they won't accommodate people in need. It's ridiculous at this stage, says one listener. Another listener, Teresa, has been in touch, just wanting confirmation to see if we can get a straight answer. Can it be guaranteed that it will be Ukrainian families? As you heard Fintan say, and as Minister Roderick O'Gorman told residents on Thursday, Teresa, they have said solidly that it will just be Ukrainian refugees, Ukrainian families going into that site in Kill. That is official confirmation from them. If that's not the case, they need to be held accountable. But that is what they have said. Let's stick with something similar, actually, because new figures out today show that there was a 267% increase in the number of people that were helped by the Irish Refugee Council over the last while. And on the line is CEO of the Irish Refugee Council, Nick Henderson. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning to you, Owen.
Just remind us of the work that you do at the Refugee Council, Nick.
Yeah, so we are a charity. We're a non-profit organisation that supports people who are coming to Ireland to seek protection and people who have been recognised as refugees. And today we launched our impact report for 2022, which describes and summarises the work that we did over the year. We give people information about their situation. We give them legal advice. We also have integration supports around housing, education, employment, and youth work. And the main theme from the report, as you've said at the beginning, is just a huge increase in demand on our services. And we're not saying we're unique in this situation at all. Community groups across the country, including, I'm sure, in Kildare, have also seen a huge increase in demand on their services.
Yeah, you've described 2022 as being an exceptional year with the arrival of 70,000 Ukrainians fleeing war alongside a record number, 13,649 international protection applicants that were seeking refuge here in Ireland. Your helplines received more than 24,000 calls last year compared to 15,000 in 2021. That's a 60% increase. What kind of information were people looking for when they called your helpline?
Yeah, so we have two helplines. We have our Ukraine helpline that started post the invasion of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And that at the beginning, it gave information to people about their entitlement to what's called temporary protection, how they could travel to Ireland, whether they could bring family members or whether they should travel alone. And over the year and into 2023, those types of queries have gradually changed. So we're receiving more queries about things like employment and also in particular how to access longer term accommodation. So the majority of people are in Ukrainian people are in serviced accommodation, which things like hotels. So it's queries around how people could move out of that type of accommodation. Our main helpline has given people advice and information around things like also around accommodation issues. One of the themes of the report is over 2022, and I think your previous piece reflected on this as well, is that there was a change and a deterioration in the type of accommodation given to people seeking protection in Ireland. Tents were introduced during the year, big use and increase in transit hubs. There's one transit hub, City West, and then also giving information to people about accessing services, and then also to a slightly lesser extent about things like family reunification. So again, a huge increase in the demand on our services, the types of queries that we were receiving.
Okay, you're also quoted here as saying, as you mentioned, the deterioration of standards in reception centres, homelessness, but also the far-right rise, presenting a darker reality for people seeking protection. And that kind of means that we're going to see quite a difficult 2023 as well. What do you mean by the far-right rise?
Yeah, so as you, I'm sure, have reported on, there has been an increase in, and it was really evident in autumn and then in January and February, an increase in public statements, public, they would just say demonstrations or protests. I'm not sure I'd use that. I wouldn't use that word, particularly outside places where people seeking protection would be accommodated. And that was of huge concern to us, and because of the direct effect that has on people who are living in that type of accommodation. And then those demonstrations have gradually changed, I think, over the last couple of months. They've tended to be less outside places of accommodation, but moved to more sort of public places like street marches. And then yesterday there was a demonstration or a protest outside Dublin Airport, which caused some problems. I think the concern that we would have is that I don't think they are people who ventilate and have these messages are at all representative of the vast, vast majority of people in Ireland. But they are able to spread what we would describe as disinformation or misinformation into communities, and also can be very public in their opposition. As your previous piece, I think, demonstrated, people do have questions about this issue. They do have, some people may have worries about this issue. We're not saying people in that situation are at all of the far right. I think it's important that we try and break down the different types of opinions people have. But it's true to say, and we've received this ourselves, there has been quite an increase in far right presence, and also the type of hate and difference that they're trying to perpetuate.
Okay, and if we look then towards the latter part of this year, what's your views on that, or what's your projections on maybe how many more people are going to be coming into this country seeking refuge, Nick?
Yeah, one thing that has been notable for 2023 so far is that there has been a decline in both the number of people coming to Ireland from Ukraine, but also a decline in the number of people seeking protection in Ireland. I think for February, the number of people seeking protection was half the number as it was in December. But nevertheless, we have, and we state it in our press release, we have very significant concerns about the situation of people who come to Ireland who are not being provided accommodation. So there's currently 371 people who are not being provided accommodation, and we are supporting well over 200 people in that situation. So that's a huge concern to us. And then moving into the summer and beyond, we believe that while the Irish government's response has been strong on the emergency side, and I think the Irish people should be very proud of what they've done, there are significant challenges ahead, mainly around helping Ukrainian people move out of long-term hotel accommodation, making sure that people can get access to the information and support that they need, and then preventing and stopping a further deterioration in standards in the accommodation people are in.
Okay, finally then, Nick, last week we spoke to Pádraig Tobin, the leader of AIM2, on the show, and I know he'd received figures from a parliamentary question that he raised about the number of refugees maybe that were coming into Ireland that didn't have relevant documentation and are now kind of stuck in no man's land, so to speak. What's your view on those who come in without relevant or necessary documentation?
Yeah, so we're asked this question a lot. The first thing to note is that in our experience, we've been doing this work for 30 years, people may not always have a document that with them or a passport, and they're having to use the assistance of an agent or a smuggler. And that agent or smuggler may give somebody a travel document to get on an aircraft, but then take it back from that person. People may not want to produce a document upon arrival. They may have the document but not want to produce it on arrival because they've told that if they do so, they may be returned immediately back to the country that they come from. And then also they may fear retribution. For example, in their home country, they may find it difficult to get a passport, particularly, for example, from people, we've worked with people from Afghanistan, where it's simply impossible to get a passport from the Taliban post their takeover in two years ago. And then the backbone to all of this is that the Refugee Convention, Article 31 of the Refugee Convention, does state that a person should not be penalised if they have had to use unlawful methods to enter a country. And the reason for this is that there's really no other way to get to Ireland or many other European Union countries. You don't get a visa to apply for asylum. So people are forced into using unusual or possibly unlawful ways to travel to a country. That's the reality that we're in. And also to reflect on that, I think this issue has got quite a lot of media attention over the recent months, but in our experience, it's only really doesn't affect a huge amount of people necessarily. And a travel document, an ID document, and a passport, if they have it, can often be a really important piece of identity for somebody's asylum claim because it helps show that they're from the country that they're from.
Okay, that's Nick Henderson, CEO of the Irish Refugee Council. New figures out today from their 2022 impact report showing that the number of people helped by the Irish Refugee Council climbed by 267% last year when compared to 2021. Thanks indeed for your time, Nick. Some of the more messages that are coming in to us on the show, on the WhatsApp. First of all, well done to the fabulous work that's been done by Nick and all at the Irish Refugee Council. We should not be elevating the needs of one group seeking international protection over another. Our humanity and empathy cannot only extend to white people or Irish people. We're better than as shown by the recent Ireland for All rally, says Orla O'Neill in Kilcullen. Joanne says, I fail to understand why one person's need is acceptable and another person's need is not, based on what kind of awful situation they are fleeing. It was made clear that these are all Ukrainian, but if they are not, so what, says Joanne. This is going into the refugee place in the equestrian centre in Kill. What's the difference, she asks. International protection applicants are also fleeing war and persecution in other parts of the world. Why should our compassion be conditional? They are all human beings. Jakob has been in touch, and this is in relation to the interview with Fintan Brett. Jakob is unhappy, saying that Fintan didn't mention that the pods don't have windows. There's no daylight in the equestrian centre, and he feels as though these are unacceptable conditions for people going into that equestrian centre. And finally, for now, Anne-Marie is in touch in relation to what we were talking about a little bit earlier on with Cuiva. She says, I never knew that there was such a thing as a non-alcoholic bar. I would have loved that. I rarely have a drink because she says they all taste like vinegar to her. So I'm always the designated driver. I have brought my friends there, says Anne-Marie. She would have brought her friends to that non-alcoholic bar, which is closing in Dublin. And she also says that non-alcoholic drinks are as expensive, sometimes more expensive than alcoholic drinks, and there's no more free drinks for designated drivers anymore.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Welcome back. Now, a new campaign, Get Rare Aware, has been launched by Rare Diseases Ireland to bring together politicians, medical experts and people living with rare diseases, including here in Kildare, to take an action on under-resourced genetic services at the Department of Clinical Genetics at Children's Health Ireland at Crumlin. Well, on the line is Vicky McGrath, CEO of Rare Diseases Ireland. Good morning, Vicky.
Good morning.
The campaign will see RDI hosting information events in each of the country's new regional health areas, including here in Kildare this afternoon at 12 noon. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But just give us an overview about this campaign, Get Rare Aware.
This is really a campaign, as it says on the tin, Get Rare Aware. Take a look at what's happening with the rare disease community and, you know, I guess get a better understanding of what's going on for people living with rare diseases around the country. You know, we're starting on the diagnostic piece, as this is an element that impacts on a lot of people. But anybody living with a rare disease will give you a myriad of challenges that they face. And so, you know, over the months and the years ahead, we hope to try and bring more and more of these challenges to the forefront, but we'll focus on diagnosis at the outset for the campaign.
It's a question I'm sure you get asked quite a lot, Vicky, something I've probably asked you before here on the show, but what qualifies as a rare disease? What kind of diseases are we talking about here?
There's thousands of rare diseases, cystic fibrosis, EB, PKU, phenylketonuria. There's thousands of them, let's be honest, Huntington's. But I guess the definition for a rare disease is something that we get from Europe, and that's a condition that affects less than 1 in 2,000 people. You know, when you think about, say, cancer, 50% of people will get a cancer diagnosis at some stage in their life. You know, this is so much less than that. And it's really, I guess, the challenge with a rare disease is that because they are so rare, that really there's not a lot of skills and expertise for each individual rare disease. So with thousands of rare diseases, you know, the skills and expertise maybe don't exist.
Okay, I see as well that you're calling for a reduction in waiting lists and extra resources to be implemented, that they're urgently needed.
Yeah, so with our campaign that we've just launched at the end of last week, and as you say, the first meeting will be today, focusing on the diagnostic experience, what we've discovered is that actually genetic testing provides a definitive diagnosis for many people living with rare diseases. For those that got access to genetics, over 70% of them actually got a diagnosis through the genetic system. But what we do know is that our genetic system in Ireland is incredibly under-resourced. We have about half the number of people working in the area as compared to other countries, particularly when we look just north of the border. You know, per million of population, we're down at about 4.3. They're up at about 7.8, I think it is. So we have about half the number of people that we need. And also our waiting lists are extraordinarily long. So you'll be sitting on a genetics waiting list routinely for about 2 years. And again, looking just north of the border, 12 weeks. So clearly we can see that there's a bit of a problem is arising there. And really, we're just trying to say, guys, we've got to do something about this. We know that there's a new strategy coming or has been developed and that will be implemented over the next 3 to 5 years. But in the intervening period, we have to do something to try and reduce that diagnostic journey for people living with rare diseases so that they can get onto the right treatments and get the right help as quickly as possible.
Your figures here show that there's around 300,000 people in Ireland living with rare diseases, and of course that doesn't just affect them, but it affects their family members and healthcare professionals and everybody that you know, is surrounding them. You're calling on the politicians to get involved here and to step up. What exactly would you like to say to them, or what do you hope that they can do?
Really, what I hope is that in the programme for government that we have at the moment, there is a commitment to support the genetic services in Crumlin. But nothing has been done since that programme for government was published. So that's nearly 3 years ago. And we need to get action now. We've got to do something to try and reduce the burden of the diagnostic odyssey. I mean, for people living with rare diseases, it's very challenging, not knowing what's going on and are you on the right treatments. But likewise, for the healthcare professionals, we know that people are bouncing from professional to professional, sitting on different waiting lists right across the healthcare system, that the consultants themselves are challenged trying to get this diagnosis and are trying to work around the lack of resources in Crumlin to try and achieve this diagnosis because they want to give the best care to their patients. So everybody is frustrated. There has been a promise made and let's deliver on this promise and actually get this system moving to the benefit of everybody in the country.
Okay, you can get more information on www.getrareaware.ie or also on the Rare Diseases Ireland website www.rdi.ie. Today at 12 noon though, Vicky, there is that online meeting that's happening which is for the Regional Health Area B, which includes Kildare, Longford, Westmeath, Offaly, Laois, West Dublin and West Wicklow, where there's around 62,000 people in that Regional Health Area living with the rare disease. It's at 12 noon. What's going to be discussed at that meeting?
This is really an opportunity to share the lived experience. So, I might give a small bit around the stats, which is typically boring, but does help to demonstrate what a burden this is. But then we have a mother from Athlone talking about the diagnostic journey she had as a family with her daughter and how long it took and the burden that they felt while they didn't know and then the relief maybe that arrived when they finally got their diagnosis. And then we also have a clinician from one of the Dublin hospitals, but that would serve patients right across the country. And just talking about her challenges on a day-to-day basis trying to get this diagnosis for her patients and the frustrations that she might encounter and what she would maybe hope to see happening.
Okay, and you can get the link to register for that information event this afternoon on www.rdi.ie/GRA for Get Rare Aware. And it's happening at 12 noon. And thanks indeed to Vicky McGrath, CEO of Rare Diseases Ireland, joining us there. A new campaign urging politicians in the county and around the country to take action on Ireland's under-resourced genetic services.